Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning and welcome to Eight in the Box. I'm your host, Football Rob. We are powered by All Access Football Radio. Check us out on NFLDraftBible.com, CollegeFootballInsiders.com, and also FSC.FM. Get involved in the chat room. We've got a lot of stuff coming up. We're going to recap the AFC-NFC Championship game. We've got a lot of great guests lined up today. Adam Mendelson of Fox Sports Radio 1200 1460. He'll be calling in from Fort Myers. We'll have Ed Sheehan from CBSSports.com. Paul Van Scott will also be joining us. But right now, we have Lisa Zimmerman of CBSSports.com. She covers the Jets. She was at the AFC Championship game in Indianapolis. And I got to say, Lisa, I didn't expect the Jets to get there. And I also, I was pleasantly surprised because they were in the game for most of the time. What was your impressions of the game on Sunday?
Yeah, it was interesting. Hi, Robert. I'm still getting sorted out after a 10-hour trip home yesterday from Indianapolis. Who knew? Yeah, it was interesting because they came out and really, really looked good. They looked like the Jets that we've seen the last couple of weeks, the last few weeks, actually. But, you know, the reality is they lost a couple of guys who were key components there. Bart Scott was not full go. They pulled him. Lito Shepard was having apparently a bad day because we were trying to figure out where he disappeared to, and I think they just pulled him. Also, losing Sean Green to what I believe is a rib injury didn't help them either. So they had some issues, but at the end of the day, I mean, I hate to sound like a cliche, but Peyton Manning is Peyton Manning, and he figures things out so fast that I think a lot of teams just don't have a shot.
And, you know, it was unbelievable to me how they kept keying on Dwight Lowry. He probably is very happy that game's finally over, and he's got a whole off season to recover from that. Do you think his confidence is going to be shattered going into next season after just getting abused constantly on Sunday?
I don't think so. Lowry's an interesting kid. He's very quiet. He's a California guy. He's real quiet, but he's also, it's hard to explain, he's kind of a dichotomy. He's real quiet, but he's also a really up-focused, like, energetic guy at the same time. And he's young, and I think he knows that he's still learning, and that's a very tight defensive back unit. I remember actually speaking to Marquise Cole, who's one of their backups who mostly does special teams, and he said one of the great things about that unit was they were also helpful to each other. So I don't think his confidence is going to be shaken. I think they did pick on him. He's only a second-year guy. He doesn't have the tools yet that a guy like Revis does, or even, frankly, Shepard. So, no, I think he'll be okay, and I think they were just beaten. They had him in, I think, some man coverage, which he might not completely be ready for in that kind of a realm. So, no, I think you're going to see Dwight Lowry continue to improve, actually.
And you know that once Revis is on the other side, they pretty much the Colts have no choice but to go the other way. And you know what else I took away from that game, Lisa? I noticed that Reggie Wayne and Dallas Clark didn't do a whole lot, and it's pretty much Pierre Garçon and Austin Colley torching the Jets. Were you surprised at how well the third and fourth receivers stepped up for the Colts?
Actually, I was not, because both of those guys are really talented, and I think they get overshadowed simply because of Reggie Wayne. But Austin Colley, from what I've watched him this year during little snippets I was able to see of Colts games, plus his game against the first game against the Jets, he's a very talented receiver, and what they've done is give Peyton Manning very equal tools to throw to. So you cover Reggie Wayne, he's going to throw to Austin Colley. You throw to Austin Colley, you know, when you cover Austin Colley, they're going to throw to Reggie Wayne, and then there's Garçon, and they've got all these guys, and then there's Dallas Clark. So even Rex Ryan said last week, he said basically they got four really good wide receivers. And so they're going to be a problem with all those guys back there.
And as far as the Jets' pressure of Peyton Manning, it was pretty much non-existent. They got one sack in the first quarter, and then after that it was pretty much smooth sailing. How were the Colts able to protect Manning pretty much the entire game with the exception of the first possession?
I asked that of Ryan, actually, in the post-game press conference because, yeah, it was noticeable. Actually, Harris sacked him twice in consecutive series, and then that was it. And I spoke to a couple of the defensive linemen and linebackers after the game, and they said they basically feel like they just adjusted. And Brian Thomas said to me, he said, we should have pressured more. And I think they stopped pressuring so much because they saw that Manning was figuring out what they were doing, and so the Jets were trying to adjust to what Manning was adjusting to, and it just became the quintessential chess match. So the Jets' defense, as good as they are, you go up against Peyton Manning. I remember after the first game when they played, back when the Jets won, when the Colts pulled their starters, several players said to me, "It's unbelievable." They said Manning knew what we were going to do before we did it.
Wow, that is pretty much what you'd expect from Peyton Manning. I'm your host,
yeah.
Football Rob. We are on 8 in the Box. We're talking with Lisa Zimmerman of CBSSports.com. She covers the Jets, been covering the Jets since 2000. So looking at the Super Bowl matchup here, Lisa, I mean, I got to favor the Colts, and the guys in Vegas are favoring the Colts. What do you think about Colts-Saints in the Super Bowl?
I know. It's so hard. You want to pick the Saints. I think we all want to pick the Saints, except for the Indy fans. I understand that. There's such a feel-good story with the Saints, and they are just such a fantastically put-together team. I think Drew Brees has gotten really overlooked this year. He's been terrific. Their defense is good. Everything they have works. But I just don't know if anybody can get past the Colts right now. Peyton Manning, what's so interesting about Peyton Manning is it's his brain. It's his ability of how well he understands all the little tiny details of the game and how quickly his brain is able to process them. He has, of course, the physical talent, but he understands the game on just such a high level, and it's about how quickly he's able to process things. I think how quickly he reads and then how quickly he's able to make things happen, and I'm just not sure if the Saints will get past that, but I think we're going to see a good game.
Oh, yeah, I mean, that goes without saying. I mean, that's going to be... Actually, I'm really surprised that the matchup shook out that way, because the number one seeds have not met in the Super Bowl since 93, so that's going to be interesting to see how that shakes out. Well, Lisa, I want to thank you for calling in. You're definitely welcome anytime, and we'll keep up with you throughout the Super Bowl week, because we'll have a lot of time to kill.
Sure, and it looks as though there's going to be a lot of Jets in the Pro Bowl, because guys are dropping out left and right. So
yes.
I think we said, a bunch of us said yesterday, you're going to start seeing the media playing, because I think they're down to us. So, but yeah, let me know. I'm always happy to come on. It's great talking to you.
All right. That was great stuff from Lisa Zimmerman. And yeah, the Pro Bowl, a lot of people are dropping out. And I was a decent running back receiver, like somebody out of the backfield. So I'm definitely ready, especially because the Pro Bowl is going to be at half speed, and that's pretty much all I've got right now is pretty much half speed. But someone who's at full speed, who's been hanging out on the line here, Paul Van Scott, always coming at full speed. So we broke down the AFC, Paul. How do you feel about the NFC, especially the whole situation with Brett Favre throwing that brainless interception to pretty much lose the game against the Saints?
Yeah, good to talk to you again, Football Rob. And Brett Favre, you never know whether you should feel sorry for him, whether you should be rooting for him, whether you should like him, whether you should hate him. All year, the media guys are saying, oh, eventually he's going to throw an interception that's really going to cost the team. And those guys turned out to be right, because what a great season, only to end in what Brett Favre is known as his worst his worst asset, or his worst tendency, and that is, to kind of throw it up for grabs at the wrong time, and that's exactly what happened. And I also understand he's also retired and unretired already six times since that.
you just brought me right into my next point. Here's the thing. This is my prediction for Brett Favre. I think he has a lot of leverage here, because first of all, aside from that horrible pass to lose the game there, he had a great season in 2009, and
right.
Plus he's 40 years old, and he's always waffling with retirement. So I think, Paul, what is going to end up happening, he's going to hold the Vikings hostage. He's going to say, listen, I want $20 million for this upcoming year, and if you don't give it to me, I'll retire. And you know what? The Vikings, they really need him a lot more than Favre needs them, because their quarterback is Sage Rosenfeld or Tavares Jackson, and that's just not going to do it for me. So I think Brett Favre is going to hold the Vikings hostage. What do you think about that?
Well, it wouldn't surprise me. Yeah, he certainly does have the upper hand, and you know, if it does come down to something like that, he'll probably wait till 3 weeks into training camp to make his final decision and say, yeah, I guess I'll take the money, and then he'll show up a week before the regular season starts. But the latest report is he's highly unlikely to return. So, of course, that means absolutely nothing.
Right, absolutely. That's 100% accurate there. We're talking with Paul Van Scott, breaking down the NFC Championship game. And the other thing that was pretty startling to me watching that game, how come nobody could hold on to the football?
Yeah, that was kind of weird. It was like, you know, if a throw wasn't exactly in someone's hands, they were dropping it. And then, of course, Minnesota giving the ball up in many different ways. You know, Peterson, is he ever going to be a solid enough back to overlook the fumbleitis, or is he going to keep fumbling, or is that going to be corrected? Who knows? He kind of took a step backward this year, and a lot of it had to do with the fumbling, so they're going to have to work on that.
Yeah, you know, when he can actually hold on to the football, he's a pretty unstoppable running back, but there's the fly in the ointment. He can't hold on to the ball, and he had three fumbles. He was responsible for three of them on Sunday. And I wonder, Paul, do you think this will creep into his mind, having a very bad game like that with ball security? Not only was it a bad game, but it was, oh, by the way, a very important game. So do you think that could ruin his confidence going forward?
Well, it could. You never know how guys are going to react to that. I remember Tiki Barber had the big fumbling problem there for a while, and then it seemed to just all of a sudden go away. I mean, they've got tricks where you can fix that. You saw the shots of Peterson on the bench holding the football. You know, you're supposed to sleep with it, some guys say. But I don't know. It wouldn't surprise me if it does cause some long-term problems. But then again, it could be something that might just go away. But if he continues to fumble at the rate he has been, he's not going to get the carries that he should be getting.
Oh, I want to correct myself there. He was responsible for two fumbles. So he wasn't as horrible as I thought, but there was a fumbled exchange during a handoff, and Favre was credited for that fumble. So two fumbles for Peterson, one for Favre, and let's check this total out. 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 total fumbles. I've never seen that in a high school game, let alone an NFC Championship game, Paul. Have you ever seen 6 fumbles in a title game like that?
No, no way. And then to still have it go in, you know, overtime, that's what's unbelievable, that they were still in it at the end after all the fumbles and the turnovers. And they had that game. It was theirs to lose, and obviously they did. They lost it. So,
yeah, no question about that. So looking forward in the Super Bowl, I'm favoring the Colts. As I said, we were talking with Lisa before. She's favoring the Colts. How do you see that matchup shaking out, Colts-Saints?
You know, I, like everybody else, you lean toward the Colts. I have a feeling, though, that this Super Bowl is going to be a surprise in the fact that anything can happen, if that makes sense. I'm not going to be that surprised if it's a blowout, particularly the Colts blowing out the Saints. It may not be as close as people think. But I'm definitely leaning toward the Colts. What I'm hoping is that there's this new trend by the TV networks, and that's when one team does something good to show the other team's quarterback on the sidelines. Every time the Jets scored a touchdown or something, they showed Peyton Manning on the sidelines. Just, I don't know if they were hoping that he would, you know, throw something or look different, but he always looked the exact same. There was no reaction, but they've continued to do that, and I hope they kind of get away from that. And we had to see several shots of Peyton Manning in slow motion walking on the sideline. He's, like, become the new Brett Favre, and he probably deserves more to be the media darling than Favre does, because he's obviously, I think, got a few more tools to work with than Brett Favre did. But everybody loves Manning right now, and I heard Lisa talking about Breeze not getting the respect he deserves this year. He kind of got overlooked. I think he got a lot of respect, but I don't think he's quite up to Manning, as nobody right now in the NFL is. So I'm thinking Colts.
Yeah, so it's pretty unanimous so far. We've got 3 Colts and no Saints here on the show there. But, Paul, I want to thank you for calling in. It's been a pleasure, and we will definitely have you on because, like I said, there will be so much time to kill from now to the Super Bowl.
Yeah, if there's anything I like doing, it's killing time. Thanks a lot,
exactly.
Rob.
That's what we do. That's what we do on 8 in the Box. And that was Paul Van Scott giving the analysis. As always, good stuff from him. I'm your host, Football Rob. You are listening to 8 in the Box, powered by All Access Football Radio. You can check us out at NFLDraftBible.com, CollegeFootballInsiders.com, and also FSC.FM. We're going to take a quick commercial break. And when we get back, we're going to do a little mock draft talk. We'll be right back after this.
I'm Rob Reed of BaseballGeeks.com and PlayerTrack.com. Since 2006, Greg Keir and I have been bringing you podcasts on baseball news, where we view the latest in baseball news with our fantasy baseball-colored sunglasses. We are proud to be a part of the Fantasy Sports Channel at BlogTalkRadio.com. Listen to us live every Tuesday at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time at BlogTalkRadio.com/BaseballGeeks. And listen to two average Joes talk about the game that we love.
Are you one of the billions of American fantasy owners who suffer from Fantasy Sports Failure Syndrome, or FSFS? If so, coming in January 2009, a new fantasy site hits the web to cure this crippling disease. FantasyPros901.com will provide you with the essentials to win your leagues, with products like our Fantasy Draft Guide, daily podcasts, daily expert articles, and the best support team anywhere on the web. Tell your doctor you need FantasyPros911.com for your Fantasy Sports Failure Syndrome now.
Fantasy versus Reality, the show in which guys and girls are just sitting around the bar talking sports and sharing opinions. Tune in next Thursday at 11 p.m. Eastern. Don't be late or you'll be kaboomed. More live fantasy sports radio than anyone on the planet. Seven continuous hours of football, baseball, basketball, and hockey action each Monday through Friday. Plus 7 hours of game day frenzy on Sunday. 30 shows in all from the best fantasy sportscasters in the business, like Craig Davis of FantasyFootball.com, the Audible Cecil Lammy, Paul Greco of Melnick and Greco Fantasy Sports, and the Fantasy Football guys Lyle Conkiel and Kevin Moore. The Fantasy Sports Channel, only on Blog Talk Radio. It's a schedule you can bet on.
All right, we're back on 8 in the Box. I'm your host, Football Rob. We are powered by All Access Football Radio. Check us out on NFLDraftBible.com, CollegeFootballInsiders.com, and also FSC.FM. And I'm really disappointed with you guys. There are no chat room visitors right now. And what's going on? We need some life in here. We need some pep in our step. And you guys aren't not contributing. Get in the chat room. Really. I mean, it's getting silly right now. But anyways, we're going to be talking about the mock draft that I've just pretty much the mock draft for 2010 NFL draft coming up in April. And I'm really upset that the draft order has not yet been completed. You know, I'm still waiting on picks 31 and 32. And since the Colts and the Saints won't be playing a Super Bowl for the next 2 weeks, I'm going to just have to flip a coin. Who's getting that pick? Who's getting the last pick in the first round? And it's ruining my whole life. My whole life revolves around my mock draft, and I can't complete it yet. And thanks to the Colts and Saints, you know, the whole, oh, let's wait 3.5 months before we play a Super Bowl. You know, like, they got to hype up the game and all that stuff. It's like, come on. I want to know who's picking where right now. And it's really bothering me that I don't know. But, you know, that's just my little silly little soapbox that I was getting on. So, looking at it, number one, my number one pick has not changed. We've had weeks to discuss it, and I don't think my number one pick will change. And Ndamukong Suh is definitely the number one consensus overall player. I mean, you just look at anybody's mock draft. They'd be foolish to have somebody else there. Because St. Louis, I know they need a quarterback, but they don't really have an offensive line to protect a quarterback. So what's the sense in drafting one? You know, he's just going to get destroyed like Matt Stafford did this season. So... And Matt Stafford, I mean, the kid's good. I'm not saying that. I'm saying, why pick him if you can't keep them healthy. That's what I'm saying. So, especially you got Steve Spagnuolo running the show for St. Louis now. He's a defensive-minded guy. You'd have a nasty little defensive line there if you pick Sue. You'd have Chris Long, Howie's kid. You'd have Laurinaitis as a linebacker. You might even get a little something out of Leonard Little. If this guy, Ndamukong Suh, can do what everybody thinks he can do, you might have a nice defensive front there, and that'll keep you in the game. If you have a good front seven, and obviously we know they have a great running game. Steven Jackson had a great season for the 1-15 Rams. That guy's a bull. So you got a running game, you got a defense. You're playing in a weak NFC West. You might have a chance to, who knows, pull off 5 or 6 wins if you just straighten that defense out. So Sue, number one. Number two, Gerald McCoy. Going to Detroit, I have him going to. And here's an interesting guy. Gerald McCoy is a great defensive tackle. In any other year, he would be the consensus number one D tackle coming off the board. But he just, I don't know, he picked a bad year to come out of the draft. Because he could have been the best D tackle had it not been for Sue. He's got cat-like quickness. He's very strong, very stout. He's a pass rusher that plays at 300 pounds, which is very hard to find. He's pretty good against the run, too. I mean, he's a complete player, and he's not the number one D-tackle on the board. You know? Just kind of sucks for him. He might have been better off staying for his senior season just so that he could be the number one defensive player off the board. But, you know, I guess going number two, number three is not a big deal to him. So he decides to come out as a junior. And I think he goes to Detroit. Tampa, you got to go with Berry, Eric Berry. I mean, those three, we don't have privy information as to who St. Louis, Detroit, and Tampa Bay are looking at in free agency, what kind of holes they're looking to fill. But I would have to think, no matter what happens from now to the draft, those three picks are pretty much set. Sue, McCoy, and Berry, in that order. And again, Detroit, they suck so much, they need so much help. They could go McCoy or Berry. Heck, they could even go Okung. But the point is, when you have a defensive tackle that can rush the passer, that just collapses the pocket. That ruins the whole pocket. And that causes havoc. So, even though I think Berry's going to be a great player, and I think Okung's going to be a great player, you got to go McCoy, because that position is a lot more important when you're talking about rushing the passer. If you could get a pass rusher from that position, that's huge. That's just huge. So I think the wild card, Sue, McCoy, Berry, I mean, I think that's pretty much set. I think the wild card in this whole thing are the Redskins. That's when the draft gets interesting, because you got the moron owner, Daniel Snyder. Guy doesn't know what he's doing, and he'll never know what he's doing. So is he going to pick a quarterback? Is he going to pick a Sam Bradford? Is he going to pick a Jimmy Clausen? Is he going to make the mistake and pick a quarterback? Or is he going to let his football people make the decisions, step back, and let Mike Shanahan do the right thing and take Okung out of Oklahoma State? You know, that's the whole thing. Is he willing to stop being a moron? If he is, Okung goes to the Redskins. If he isn't, one of the quarterbacks goes. So that's I think, where the whole draft will... All the dominoes start there at number four. Number five, Kansas City. They need to protect their passer. Matt Castle, they've invested a lot in him. I think they got to go Anthony Davis. Anthony Davis, the junior tackle out of Rutgers. I mean, you know, you again, they're bad. I mean, all these teams are bad. They have a lot of holes to fill. But since you've already invested that much in Castle, and despite being on an awful team, he looked like he had a good season. And plus, it looks like they have a legit number one receiver in Dwayne Bowe. So, being that as it is, I think you got to go offensive line, because you've already spent a couple first-round picks on defense the last few years. Tyson Jackson, and a couple years ago, they got Glenn Dorsey out of LSU. So I think it's time to look at the offensive side of the ball and go offensive line. And when you look at the stats, you look at Matt Castle, he definitely had a good year, and that's without any offensive line help. I mean, look, he had 2,900 yards, 16 touchdowns, 16 interceptions. The quarterback rating is not that good, but you know what? With that lack of talent around you, that's a pretty good year, my friend. That's a pretty good year. So that's rounding out the top five. And speaking of the draft, we've got Ed Sheehan on the line from CBS Sports. He covers the Washington Redskins. And we just got finished talking about the top five, Ed, and I think that they should go Russell Okung out of Oklahoma State, but that's the whole fly in the ointment. What's Daniel Snyder going to do? Is he going to go for the flashy quarterback, or is he going to let his football people make the decision? What's your feeling on that?
Well, Rob, to be honest with you, I don't know. There's two trains of thought on this. Whether they want to try to make another run at the playoffs this year, and they can do that if they rebuild that offensive line, and of course you'd want to go Okung at that point. Or do you want to build for the future and take a chance on Bradford if he really impresses you during his team workouts? I don't think they're sold on Campbell as being the franchise quarterback. Does that mean he can't lead you to the playoffs? No. I mean, he can take you to the playoffs, but can he win a Super Bowl? I don't think they're sold on him being able to do that. But if that's the case, they may just say, all right, we're already down. Let's build for the future. Let's get Bradford in here and just build off of that.
And as you know, Ed, I'm not too big on Bradford, because he's definitely shown that I think he's pretty soft. He lost four of his five starting linemen the year that he won the Heisman. That following season, he loses four of five starters, two to the draft, two to graduation. And then on a routine play against BYU, the guy gets dinged up. And then against Texas, he re-injures the same injury, and it's like, you know, how many clues do you need to know before he's damaged good? So I'm not too big on him at all, but do you think that he's better than Campbell? I would have to say absolutely not.
No, at this point, no, he's not better than Campbell. But like I said, I think they're going to decide whether, you know, long-term, give him a year to rehab that shoulder, work the NFL system, basically sit on the bench and watch, and hope that he heals, matures, gets stronger, and that, it's a good investment for them down the road. But, I don't know. I don't know what the approach they're going to take personally. I would take Okung, grab a couple free agent linemen, and rebuild that offensive line, and focus on next year as opposed to, three or four years down the road. But, it's not my team. And you know how Snyder likes to think. He likes those big names to make the headlines, and Bradford's that type of guy. But, from what I understand, Snyder's taking a back seat to all this. So we'll really see if it makes sense. I'm sure Shanahan will take Okung. We'll see.
Now, before you got on there, I was saying that the top three picks, Ndamukong Suh, Gerald McCoy, and Berry out of Tennessee, that these three players are pretty much a lock to go in that order. And then the whole wild card is Washington. Would you agree with that?
I don't know. I don't know if Tampa's going to go with Barry. I think they may be the wild card. They may throw a wrench in the works and take Okung. I think they need to rebuild that offensive line as well. So I'm not sold on Barry going to Tampa.
Wow! Imagine if Barry falls. Would you like to see him in burgundy and gold, Eric Berry?
Well, I'll tell you what. I mean, we all saw how bad LeRon Landry got burned last year.
That's why I asked.
He's just not a free safety. He's a strong safety, and he needs to be up closer to the line because, you know, you put him deep, his aggressiveness, all it takes is one pump fake, and boom, you're by him. You cannot leave him on an island. So, you know, that'd be a nice combination. Move LeRon to strong safety and put Barry back at free safety. But, you know, I don't know if they'll go that route. Defense isn't necessarily something that they may be focusing on. Obviously, the offense was the whole downfall of the team this year. But the defense does have some holes that they need to fill. Cornerback and safety and, you know, they probably could use a middle linebacker to, even though London Fletcher made the Pro Bowl, I think he's on the decline, and he's a little undersized for that middle linebacker position. So they do have a few holes on defense. And, you know, in the first round, you go with the best available athlete, whether it's a need or not. So they may go Barry.
They may go Barry. They may just go with their quarterback. I'm your host, Football Rob. You're listening to 8 in the Box on All Access Football Radio. Check us out at NFLDraftBible.com, CollegeFootballInsiders.com, and FSC.FM. We're talking with Ed Sheehan of CBSSports.com. He covers the Redskins on Rapid Reports. So looking at the other teams in the top 10 here, and I was looking at Seattle, and I'm really curious. Maybe they need a quarterback because Matt Hasselbeck might be a little long in the tooth there. How do you see maybe a Jimmy Clausen or a Bradford going there, number 6 to Seattle?
I don't see it. I think they may end up going Joe Hayden. I told you I love Joe Hayden. I know you're not as sold on him, but I think he's a Revis-type cornerback, and he's just a football player. I've seen this guy play since high school. He's from this area in Washington, and he was an all-met quarterback here. He's just a tremendous athlete. He's a football player. I mean, he played two national championship teams, started as a freshman in the national championship game. The guy is just incredible, and I think he's going to be a tremendous pro, probably be 5 or 6-time Pro Bowl player. And he may not be at that Revis level yet, but it won't take him long to be there. And you put this guy on an island, and he can shut these guys down, and I think he'd be a tremendous pick for Seattle.
And what about, I'm trying to figure out where a quarterback would go. If Washington might be a little, you know, gun-shy on a quarterback in Seattle, how about a team like Buffalo? Do you think Jimmy Clausen fits there or Bradford fits there?
Yeah, I think definitely Buffalo is going to have to go quarterback. They do not have a quarterback for the future. It'll either be Bradford or Clausen at that point. And I think they'll take who's ever left. I don't know who ranks higher on their board. But, yeah, I think that's definitely where Buffalo is going to lean toward is quarterback at that point.
So you're not too sold on Trent Edwards or Ryan Fitzpatrick, huh?
As my third quarterback, yeah, that's fine.
Yeah, it would make a great backup, you know, clipboard guy. I mean, definitely, that would definitely make a lot of sense there. But also, another team that I want to just, some of these teams are really boring. Like Cleveland, they'll never figure it out. I don't even need to talk about them. But number 8, Oakland. I am definitely picking Taylor Mays to go there because Al Davis is just a height, weight, speed guy. And there's no other prospect that fits that description better than Taylor Mays. How do you feel about the USC safety going 8 overall?
That could make sense. It's a good fit. He's from that area. Kind of a Raider-type player, likes to go for the big hit, the knockout punch. Sometimes pays the price for that because he's not a really wrap-up guy. And, it could be a good fit there.
What's that? Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, I know Al Davis also likes those, stand-up linebacker, defensive end slash, guys that like to rush the quarterback, too. Not that Al Davis has much say, if any say anymore, but, they could go that route, too. Rolando McClain or, a Carlos Dunlap type player.
And now we got to talk, of course, we've got to talk, Ed, about the New York Giants here. And they had a lot of trouble stopping people last season, particularly late in the year. They got off to a 5-0 start. They finished 8-8. That's just unacceptable. I'm looking at Sergio Kindle, the linebacker out of Texas, to go there at 15. I think that would be a very good fit for them. What do you think that they'll do? What need will they address first?
I've seen different ways of looking at this from different analysts. Some say offensive line. They have this kid, Balaga from Iowa, Brian Balaga, offensive tackle going to the Giants. I've seen a potential inside linebacker / outside linebacker, Rolando McClain, if he slides down that far. I've seen going to Derek Morgan from Georgia Tech if he ends up sliding down that far.
Wow, another defensive end, huh? They just load up on the defensive line.
Well, some of the problems they had with Houston last year. I don't know if that's going to continue or if they've resolve that. He sure did look good against the Redskins, so, but then again, a lot of people did. So, I don't know. It's something that the Giants have really focused on really since the Parcells days, is getting that pass rush, and you can never have enough pass rushers. So, it could be something they look at. If Derek Morgan slides, which I don't think he will, it could be something they look at.
That's definitely something that they could look at because they've had some problems defensively, and they had to fire their defensive coordinator, Bill Sheridan. But we're going to have to take a quick commercial break. We'll be right back with Ed Sheehan of CBSSports.com after this message from the sponsor.
I'm Rob Reed of BaseballGeeks.com and PlayerTrack.com. Since 2006, Greg Kier and I have been bringing you podcasts on baseball news, where we view the latest in baseball news with our fantasy baseball-colored sunglasses. We are proud to be a part of the Fantasy Sports Channel at blogtalkradio.com. Listen to us live every Tuesday at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time at blogtalkradio.com/baseballgeeks. And listen to two average Joes talk about the game that we love.
Are you one of the billions of American fantasy owners who suffer from fantasy sports failure syndrome, or FSFS? If so, coming in January 2009, a new fantasy site hits the web to cure this crippling disease. FantasyPros901.com will provide you with the essentials to win your leagues, with products like our fantasy draft guide, daily podcasts, daily expert articles, and the best support team anywhere on the web. Tell your doctor you need FantasyPros911.com for your fantasy sports failure syndrome now.
Fantasy versus reality, the show in which guys and girls are just sitting around the bar talking sports and sharing opinions. Tune in next Thursday at 11 p.m. Eastern. Don't be late or you'll be kaboomed. More live fantasy sports radio than anyone on the planet. 7 continuous hours of football, baseball, basketball, and hockey action each Monday through Friday. Plus 7 hours of game day frenzy on Sunday. 30 shows in all from the best fantasy sportscasters in the business, like Craig Davis of FantasyFootball.com, the Audible Cecil Lammy, Paul Greco of Mel Nick and Greco Fantasy Sports, and the Fantasy Football guys Lyle Conkiel and Kevin Moore. The Fantasy Sports Channel, only on Blog Talk Radio. It's a schedule you can bet on.
All right, we're back on 8 in the Box. I'm your host, Football Rob, powered by All Access Football Radio. Check us out on NFLDraftBible.com, CollegeFootballInsiders.com, and FSC.FM. We were breaking down the draft with Ed Sheehan of CBSSports.com. He covers the Washington Redskins on Rapid Reports. So, Ed, I got to ask you, of all the quarterbacks here, we didn't talk about Tim Tebow yet. Where do you think he fits in to the mock draft? Does he go in the first round?
I don't think he will, although he's very competent. I think he could. He has the talent. I think he's going to be a good NFL quarterback. I don't think he's going to be a great NFL quarterback. He's a winner, though. I mean, he's the type of guy that, you know, can just carry you through desire and leadership, and just he has the mental makeup of a winner, and that can get you a long ways in the NFL. And the guys believe in you. If you're lying, you're just pushing them along. And I think somebody's going to get a steal with this guy in the second round, and likelihood it'll probably be Jacksonville, whether they trade up to do so in the second round or just stay where they're at. But I think he's going to end up in Jacksonville. There was talk that they might take him in the first round, but I don't think that makes sense.
Well, I have to mention, Ed, you say Tim Tebow was a winner, but so was Danny Werfel in college. Would that scare you off if you're an NFL team? Because the whole winner, here's another guy, Ken Dorsey. He was a winner in college, and these guys just don't translate to the NFL. Do you think that would scare off some teams?
No, I think Florida was a winner because of Tim Tebow. I think those other guys that you mentioned were winners because they were part of a winning team, winning system. You could have plugged anybody in and probably thrown the ball to some of the talent that they had to throw to, and they would have been just as successful, maybe not completely as successful because those guys did have some skills, but it didn't translate to the NFL. I watched Tebow pick apart Cincinnati, who is a pretty respectable team, in that final game, and they say he can't throw deep. I saw him throw a 50-yard bomb right on the mark. I saw him, execute a perfectly planned screen. I saw him hit a tight end on the move down the seam in the middle. I mean, this guy can throw all the passes. I don't know what the knock on him is. I think it's probably the deep out that they have concerns over, that he doesn't have, he doesn't put it on a line and it's not a pretty pass. It wobbles a little bit, But he kind of reminds me of a Boomer Esiason. I mean, I know they're both left-handed, but the same size, same type of body. Boomer had a great career. He was kind of downplayed going into the draft. I still think Cincinnati ended up taking him. I can't remember where Boomer went, but he ended up having a pretty darn good career. And I think Tebow's going to have a Boomer-like career.
Well, I think Jet fans would disagree with you, Ed. he didn't fare too well in New York. I know Cincinnati was where he made his mark, but New York fans, they don't like him too much.
Well, there is a reason why Cincinnati let him go. I mean, he was kind of on the downside of his career at that point, but he was good his first 4 or 5 years at Cincinnati. I tell you, he looked like the next superstar, and he was right up there with those elite quarterbacks. And he just faltered off at the end. I don't know if it was desire or what, but he had a good career.
Yep, he definitely did his thing, losing in the Super Bowl to Joe Montana. No, I'm just kidding. But so now we're looking at the other picks in the draft, and one guy that I'm really intrigued about, Ed, is Dez Bryant out of Oklahoma State. I know he missed most of the season because he had that situation where he was contacting Deion Sanders, and that was against NCAA regulations. But heck, even if he misses the whole season, I think he's still the top receiver in this draft. I see him going 12 to Miami. I think that would be a great fit because Chad Henne would finally have a real receiver to throw to.
Yeah, Yeah, I don't understand that whole Deion Sanders thing myself. Is he an agent or something? I mean, I don't know why it's illegal for anybody to talk to Deion Sanders. But, you know, I guess they want to get a guy out there, they find a way to get a guy out somehow. But, I mean, the guy works for the NFL Network. I know he's part of the NFL, but, I mean, he's not negotiating this guy's contract, is he? I don't know why it was illegal. I still don't understand the rules behind that. But, anyway, Dez Bryant is a wonderful talent. You know, CBS has him going to Cincinnati with the 21st pick. But
oh, really?
Yeah, yeah. Miami could snag him early. I don't disagree with that, Yuri Rob. I just don't know if Parcells is going to take a receiver that early. If they do decide to take him, they may just trade down. They won't stay at 12 to take him.
Well, it's definite that they need a receiver, and if he's there, I would definitely advise them to go ahead and take him, because he looks like a man playing against boys out there, and whenever you can dominate competition like that, that translates to the NFL level, because you need to have a whole lot of confidence to play like that, and Dez Bryant definitely has it. But another guy I want to talk to you about, and I know you're not too high on him, C.J. Spiller out of Clemson. I see him as being, you know, a Leon Washington kind of third down back, a kind of guy that can give you a spark, an instant spark. You're not too high on him, though, are you?
Only because he's not an everyday down back. I mean, I don't understand the thinking behind taking a guy that can only maybe touch the ball 10 to 15 times a game in the first round. You know, to me it just doesn't make sense, but I think somebody's going to do it. I mean, because he's the highest ranked running back, so they're not going to let him slide beyond the first round. And yes, he is a Leon Washington type player. Return kickoffs, return punts, come in, catch the ball for you, make the big plays to turn the game around. But then again, I mean, there could be games where he might only touch the ball 9-10 times, and like, do you really want your first-round pick doing that? And he's not an every-down back. A Javid Best might be better, you know, if you're looking for a 20 to 25 carry a game guy, you might go in that direction. But you know, Spiller does have that big play potential and can turn a game around. I just wouldn't take him, at least in the top 20. Now, towards the end of the first round, if you're a playoff team, you just need a hole to fill here or there, yeah, he might be your guy to fill in, and could make the difference between just being a playoff team and being a Super Bowl contender.
Well, there you go. We got some great insight out of Ed Sheehan from CBSSports.com. Want to thank Ed for calling in, as always, bringing the knowledge from CBSSports.com. Our next guest, check this out. Our next guest is Adam Mendelson from Fox Sports Radio 1200 1460 Sports Now. You can check it out on the website, fsr1200.com. And he's on the air from 3 to 7 p.m. Eastern every weekday. And guess what, guys? He is an alum, all right? He is an alum of Northwestern. And we have the fight song right here. So before we welcome him in, we're going to have to play the fight song right now. Here's the Northwestern fight song. Like them apples. You see, we come prepared, Adam. We come prepared. When you call in, we are ready to go.
That was the greatest introduction I've ever received, ever. That's better than on my show, where they refer to me occasionally by my full name and very rarely. That was great. Thank you, Rob. I'm fired up now. Let's do this.
All right. So we were breaking down the draft with Ed Sheehan of CBSSports.com. We're breaking down the Super Bowl. We have a lot of time to kill before the Super Bowl because, as you know, we have to wait 2 weeks for the freaking game. So here's the thing that I want to talk to you about. The Pro Bowl, you are credentialed to go and cover the Pro Bowl. It's going to be in Miami. And I think they should just do away with this game because every good player is pretty much tapping out, and you're having horrible quarterbacks like Vince Young go.
You know what? I heard that you are next. If one other player drops out, that you are going to be one of the quarterbacks for the AFC. So congratulations on that. I think it's a waste of time. I think it is a ginormous waste of everybody's time. Moving it a week ahead of the game does nothing except leave out more players. I have no idea. Don't tell me about conference pride. Nobody cares if the AFC All-Stars are better than the NFC All-Stars. No one has ever cared about that in the last, well, maybe in the last 15 to 20 years. The players don't care. They like to go to Hawaii. Now they can't even do that, although South Beach is not a bad alternative, Rob. It's a waste of everybody's time. And the fact that David Garrard was added to the game yesterday makes it even more of a joke. The three quarterbacks in the AFC, Matt Schaub, who I happen to like, but come on. He's your starting quarterback in the Pro Bowl, Vince Young and David Garrard. Step right up and buy a ticket, Rob. Come on. Let's go. Let's do it.
Yeah, it's crazy. And the other thing, it's like I can't think of a crappier two-time Pro Bowler than Vince Young. You know, like when you if it comes to like sucking at football, if I had to interview Vince Young on how to suck at football, he would give me so much information on the topic, it would be incredible. I couldn't even understand the things he would be telling me because it would be so mind-blowing. But this guy is in the Pro Bowl, and it just cheapens the whole event. I think maybe Jamarcus Russell's on the short list to go next year, do you think?
He's got to be, right? Here's the thing with Vince Young is imagine doing your job half well. Vince Young has stepped in midway through the season, and yes, the Titans got better, although he had a little help at the running back position, but don't, ignore that for a second. He plays half a season. His team ends up 500, and he gets into their All-Star game. Imagine if you went to work every day, and instead of working 8 hours, you worked 4 hours, and you got a bonus based on your 4 hours of work, but you did nothing else the other 4 hours. That doesn't make any sense. This whole game makes no sense. And I know people say, you know, well, they got to celebrate the game. It's a good way to put the game on display. Maybe you haven't heard of this, Rob. The Super Bowl is coming up in a couple weeks, and we spend a week in Miami leading up to it celebrating the game. Do we really need an All-Star game or a Pro Bowl to do that for us? Is that really what we need? No, of course not. It's funny. I mean, I didn't get credentials to the actual Super Bowl game. I got credentials to the Pro Bowl, and that tells you what a joke this game actually is. They're letting some schlub like me in the press box. Come on.
Hey, you got to represent the Wildcats, you know what I mean?
You know I will. And I will, every time a Northwestern Wildcat makes a play in the game, I will start singing the fight song. I'll get kicked out by the second quarter, but whatever, it'll be fine.
I'm your host, Football Rob. You're listening to 8 in the Box, powered by All Access Football. Check us out on NFLDraftBible.com, CollegeFootballInsiders.com, and FSC.FM. Get involved in the chat room. We're talking with Adam Mendelsohn of Fox Sports Radio, 1200, 1460 Sports Now. Check it out on FSR1200.com. Now, we mentioned Northwestern, and this is the most Northwestern talk we've ever done on this show, Adam, and that's because you're here, so we cater to whatever your needs are. But talk about that bowl game. You had about 35 chances to win, and you didn't. And Auburn, like, they just scraped by the skin of their teeth. What happened there?
Well, you know, first let's get the obvious out of the way. Most people thought Northwestern had no chance because they're going up against the SEC, and people just see the name Northwestern and assume that they somehow snuck into a bowl game. Northwestern was a very good football team this year. They struggled midway, but for all the Iowa haters out there, and I have a feeling there are quite a few who had wanted no business with Iowa in near a national championship game, you're welcome, because if Northwestern doesn't hurt Tansy and doesn't win in Iowa, who knows? Iowa almost won in Columbus with a backup quarterback. So Northwestern deserves to be in a New Year's Day bowl. They fell behind by 14 points twice in the second half against an SEC team and came back both times to tie the game. That being said, you have a 43-yard field goal as time's expiring. You have to make that kick. And Demos, the kicker for Northwestern, was a Groza semifinalist. I mean, he's a good kicker. When he trotted onto the field, I really thought he was going to make that kick. When he kicked it, it was going straight, then it hooked to the right. you know, what else are you going to do? Everyone, we've seen in the NFL playoffs, Rob, we've seen kickers, frankly, choke. And we saw it in the Outback Bowl. As for the overtime, you know, Demos gets hurt after missing yet another kick. Do I have a problem with them taking the field goal? I really don't. I don't. That's what Northwestern does. They've run the fumble rooski more times than any other team I can think of. From the time I was a senior in 02, they ran it 5 straight years. They ran it 8 times in 5 years, and Randy Walker was still the coach before he passed away. They were 8 for 8 on running the fumble rooski. I know it sounds ridiculous, but it's true. They love that play. The execution was a little bit lacking. They hurried it a little too much. It didn't work out. Auburn won. Congratulations to them. But I think a lot of people did see that Northwestern does play an exciting brand of football. Are they the greatest team on the planet? Of course not. Of course not. They're never going to be that way unless they have one, you know, lightning in a bottle type year. But I think they entertained the nation on New Year's morning and helped people get over the hangover a little bit quicker.
Yeah, they definitely entertained me because the last Wildcat game that I saw previous was USC Northwestern in the Rose Bowl
right.
in 96 when Keyshawn Johnson was there. That was like the last time I even knew that Northwestern was around. But going to the NFL draft is Corey Wooten and Andrew Brewer. So which guy, I mean, they got a couple of guys there that could make an impact at the NFL level. How do you see those two guys shaking out in the next level?
Yeah, well, Mike Kafka, starting quarterback, he played well in the East-West Shrine game over this past weekend. I think Kafka's going to be a better quarterback than people think. I mean, he's going to have to get a break. No one's going to put Kafka in and draft him and say, you know, he's going to be our starting quarterback in 3 years. They got to groom him. But, you know, if he is a guy who everyone thought was a running quarterback and just kept passing the ball this year, was the best passing quarterback in the Big Ten this past year. For Corey Wooten, he would have been a late first-round, early second-round pick last year. He tore his ACL in overtime in the Alamo Bowl, which is the only reason he came back for his senior year. And, in a torn ACL, you know, you come back the next season, but you need a full year, really, to get it good. He was starting to hit his stride a little bit. He is so fast. He is so fast off the end that I think a team is going to get him as a steal. Late, maybe third round, maybe even later than that. And if he gets healthy, and I think he can, he is going to be a guy that people look at a few years from now as having an impact. For Andrew Brewer, he's a converted quarterback into a wide receiver. You know, I just can't see him getting drafted. I think he'll be a free agent signing. He's a good guy to have for trick plays. I mean, we talked about the Outback Bowl. He threw the two-point conversion that tied the game late in the fourth quarter because he was a converted quarterback. But I saw him start a lot of games as a freshman at Northwestern. You don't want that guy anywhere near the quarterback position. With all due respect to him, he is not a quarterback. He ended up being a decent receiver. He gives you some height. He gives you some size. I think he'll make the least impact of the three guys I just talked about.
You don't think he'll be like a Joe Jurevicius, like a possession receiver at all?
Could he be? Yes. Do I see it panning out that way? You know, you got to get lucky. I mean, Jurevicius got lucky in the organization that he ended up in, and then he worked his tail off, and it worked out for him. Brewer, Northwestern guys, and I don't mean to play us up any more than we deserve, but they have to work harder because the reason they went to Northwestern is because none of the big guys wanted them, let's be honest. So you know that Brewer is going to work in practice every day. If he gets in the right organization where they're going to give him some time to develop, maybe as a practice squad player at first, then he gets the break and gets on the game day, you know, active roster, and then gets in some time, he's going to catch just about everything thrown to him. He doesn't drop a lot of passes. But Ross Lane, who came out of Northwestern last year, I thought was a much better prospect than Brewer was, and he didn't get drafted. He got a couple of tryouts, and nothing really panned out. So we'll see. I mean, I certainly hope so. He put in a lot of work to convert from a quarterback to a receiver, but I'm a little skeptical to see if teams will give him an opportunity.
Well, I'm definitely rooting for him because my last name is Brewer, and I want to see a family relative do well. I want to have a Brewer football jersey. I don't even care if it's like, you know, some weird team like the Chiefs. I want to see a Brewer succeed. We have Ronnie Brewer in the NBA, who's my cousin, and we have Corey Brewer, who's my long-lost brother. So if Andrew Brewer could get that, you know, the holy trinity of Brewers in sports,
there you go.
Then we got something going. But, Adam, it was a pleasure talking to you. You can check Adam's show out, FSR1200.com. That'll be every weekday from 3 to 7 p.m. Adam, it was a pleasure, my friend.
Thank you, Rob. Appreciate it. We'll do it again sometime.
All righty. Sounds good. That was Adam Mendelson, Northwestern alum, also, of course, FSR1200.com, FSR1200.com, FSR1200.com. Shameless plug. That's all the time we have on this show. I'm your host, Football Rob, signing off.